UK Wine Show, show number 29, Taylor's Port. G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 29 for the 15th of December. This week we're going to be talking to Roderick Smith from Metzendorf, who are the importers into the UK of Taylor's Port. Roderick is one of the new MWs, and he's got quite a bit to say about port and how to get the most out of your port this Christmas. I just thought I'd take this opportunity to plug 3050. 3050 is the sponsor of the UK Wine Show, and 3050 run wine tastings both for corporate groups and private individuals. All you need to do is get a group of friends together and we'll come along and run a wine tasting. Good fun, teach a wee bit about wine, and always have a laugh. That's 3050, the wine tasting company. And before we get into the interview with Rod, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. Champagne producers have been given the green light to increase yields as a future insurance policy against bad harvests. France's wine regulatory body, the INAO, has granted permission for the maximum yield for the 2007 harvest to be set at 15,500 kilos per hectare. This is 3,100 kilos more than the standard yield set for next year. However, any extra volume won't become part of the general harvest. Instead, it will be held in tank by growers in case there is a poor champagne harvest as a result of disease, frost or hail hitting the vineyards. According to Elodie Pasty at the INAO, the regulatory body will supervise exactly which producers can use this stock and when. More news from France is that French primary school children could soon be having wine appreciation classes as part of their curriculum. The idea was put forward by French politicians in a report that calls for an education campaign to help revive the country's ailing wine market. French winemakers have suffered not only from a decline in exports, but also a fall in domestic consumption. And currently, over 90% of French under-25s say they prefer other drinks to wine. According to the report, young people should be taught about the origins, history and characteristics of French wine. The hope is that this will promote demand for quality and a respect for nature, as well as introducing a new generation to the joys of drinking wine. And finally, phylloxera, the bug that decimated Bordeaux vineyards in the 1860s, has hit Australia's Yarra Valley in Victoria. The affected vineyard is owned by one of the area's largest producers, Foster's, whose wineries include Yarra Ridge, St Hubert's and Coldstream Hills. The company was alerted to the problem after routine aerial monitoring identified unusual vine growth. This was inspected by vineyard staff and finally confirmed by expert examination. The affected vineyard has been quarantined and the infected vines will be removed and destroyed. The Victorian Department of Primary Industries is now reviewing other Yarra Valley vineyards to determine the extent of the infestation. Phylloxera is present in other parts of Australia, but only in isolated wine-growing regions such as Victoria and New South Wales. That's all in the news this week. Back to you, Chris.
Thanks for that, Jane. I suppose it's quite interesting. I always laugh when you hear of people who set quality as their utmost important thing, and as soon as a bit of pressure comes on, they crank up the volume, as they're doing in Champagne. It's quite an ongoing battle in Champagne at the moment regarding whether to expand the Champagne region or whether to increase yields to allow them to produce more wine from the same region. They've got a real supply and demand issue where demand is outstripping supply. So if they don't increase the amount of Champagne they produce, then prices are bound to go up. The other thing that I thought was interesting was the Foster's vineyards are attacked by phylloxera in the Yarra Valley. Australia does have a few regions that don't have any phylloxera. Phylloxera is a louse that really is bad for vineyards. They suck the vines dry of nutrients and life and can decimate vineyards. In actual fact, it's what really destroyed Bordeaux in the 1860s and led to the production of great wine in the Rioja, because all the Bordeaux producers couldn't make decent wine in Bordeaux, so they all moved down to Rioja. I doubt if they're going to abandon Yarra, but once phylloxera is into a region, no one's ever successfully removed it. And the only way to really deal with phylloxera is to dig up all your vines and replant them on different rootstock. The way they got around it in the 1800s was to use American rootstock, and that has an immunity to the phylloxera. So we'll see what happens there, but I imagine Yarra Valley is in for a rather turbulent time over the next 5 to 10 years. That ends my comment on the news. Let's have a listen to what Roderick has to say about port.
Hi, I'm here with Roderick Smith from Metzendorf. You're the importers for Taylor's into the UK.
Yep, that's right. Metzendorf is a company that's part owned by the Taylor Group, which is a family-run group of port houses in the Douro.
Excellent. Who owns Metzendorf? You say it's partly owned by Taylor's.
Yeah, the rest of us is owned by Champagne Bollinger.
Oh, that's quite nice, isn't it?
Nice thing to drop in at parties.
Yeah, port and champagne. You must be very popular at the parties.
Absolutely.
You guys import Taylor's, and we're going to be talking about Taylor's in this podcast. Mm-hmm. It's not always called Taylor's, though, is it?
No, the full company name is Taylor, Fladgate and Yeatman, which is based on the founding partners. And indeed in the States, it's called Taylor Fladgate on the label because there's a winery in New York called Taylor's. But there's no connection.
In general, in Portugal, there's a couple of big players, isn't there?
Yep, there's us. We own four port houses, which is Taylor, Fonseca, Delaforce and Croft.
Yep.
Croft being a recent acquisition. And the Symington family own several other of the big houses you'd have heard of, Wars and Grahams and that kind of thing.
Is there a lot of small players in there or is it dominated by you two?
Well, the two family companies do dominate, but there's plenty of smaller players, which is good because it keeps a nice balance of the small and the large.
Roderick, do you want to touch on how port's made? Because it's quite different to a lot of wines.
It is. Well, supremely briefly, port is a wine that's made, it starts off the same as red wine. It's made from thick-skinned black grapes grown in heat. It's pressed, and then the fermentation starts, gets to about 7% alcohol, and then it's stopped by the addition of pure neutral grape spirit, about brandy, but it's clear, it's sort of nasal hair burningly strong, 77%. Mm-hmm. And that then affects a liquid that's two-fifths red wine, two-fifths unfermented red grape juice, and one-fifth spirit, which is obviously sweet, and about 20% alcohol. And it then needs to age to make sure all those elements blend together.
Sure. But there's also lots of different types of port, isn't there? There's like, I've seen, ruby port, white port, vintage port, LBV. It's like there's more types of port than you can poke a stick at.
White port's a different thing altogether because it's made from white grapes, but in the same manner. It does tend to be slightly drier. That's the more commercial style. Port made with black grapes is red when it begins, which is ruby, but then they can choose to age it in two different ways. A light aging in barrels will produce a ruby port, and a longer aging in smaller oak casks will produce a tawny port, which is where the colour goes. And then you get various statements of age and quality within those.
Okay, what about things like LBV? Are they aged in casks as well?
Yeah, it is. LBV stands for late bottled vintage, which the clue's in the name there. It's the wine of a single vintage, which is bottled after a longer period in oak, about 5 to 6 years. This is a style, in fact, that Taylor's pioneered, certainly in the UK. And the advantage of a late bottle vintage port is that it will be bottled when it's ready to drink after all the aging has been done in barrel. So you can drink it straight away and you don't need to decant it because they can lightly filter it before bottling.
I get a wee bit confused actually between LBV and say tawnies, because tawnies, they're aged for what, 10 years, sometimes 20 years in a barrel. And then they're bottled, so...
Exactly. Well, the thing to look out for is with tawnies, there will always be a statement of how many years old rather than a particular year. And in fact, it can only be 10, 20, 30 or 40 years on the label if it's got an age statement. And those are actually averages. So a 10-year-old tawny, for example, may have some slightly younger wine to keep it fruity, but to qualify would then need some older wine to make the average 10 years. A wine with a single year on the label is likely to be a red port with some age behind it, whether that's in the bottle or in a cask. There is one exception to that, so you're right, it is confusing. That's Colita, which is a single vintage tawny, but you don't see those too often.
What about vintage ports? Everybody gets really excited over vintage port. Why don't they just have a vintage port every year?
Well, vintage port, indeed, vintage port accounts for about 95% of the torque, but only about 5% of the wine. Vintage port is the highest quality statement the port house can make, and they'll decide to make a vintage, and they call it declaring a vintage, only every so often, generally no more than 3 years in any decade, will be deemed high enough quality. It'll be the best of the best. In this decade, for instance, 2003, the hot summer of 2003 was perfect for port production, so that's a declared vintage, as indeed 2005 may well be, but the decision's only taken in the March 2 years later, so we'll find out in next spring. Generally, port houses don't declare two sequential vintages, just the very highest quality vintages.
Why is that? Bought.
I think it's to keep the excitement up and to make sure people are aware of which years actually have been good enough. In years that aren't declared as vintages, you sometimes get the wine of a single vineyard estate, which in Portuguese is called single quinta, mm-hmm. and they're bottled separately. They are actually a true vintage port, but they're the produce of the best single vineyard in a year not deemed to be good enough for vintage port. And they can represent exceptional bargains when you happen to get a succession of really high quality years, which we've had recently. So some of the 2004 single quintas will be really good bargains, as they were in 96 with...
We've been tasting a lot of Quinta Vergelas, the 1996 recently.
Yeah,
That's from your top estate, isn't it?
That's one of the so-called A grade rated vineyards in the Douro, and one of the most highly regarded in the eastern upper Douro. Very hot, very arid. The grapes need to dig their roots really deep into the soil to get to the water and the nutrients. So that produces a complex flavour, and Vergelas is one of the top properties. So in years where an overall vintage is not declared, they'll bottle Vergelas as a single quinta wine. Again, not every year; it has to be good enough.
Yep.
And that can be a much better bargain than many other ports. But they also have the slight advantage that they tend to be kept in Portugal, in Vila Nova de Gaia, for longer before they're released, so that they're actually more ready to drink when you get them. So, 96, for example, at 11 years old, is now approaching being perfectly drinkable. That will keep.
Yep.
Whereas vintage ports are aged only briefly in barrel and then need a long time in bottle.
What do you think is that, like you talked about, you know, the single quintas being quite a good bargain, particularly in a non-declared year. What other sort of wine port would you reckon is a good deal?
Well, I think one of the greatest bargains not just in port but in the whole of wine is aged tawny, which has a smaller market. As we've discussed, vintage has all the talk and lots of the sort of ethereal commercial blue chip qualities about it, which pushes the price up. Aged tawny ports tend to be the most exceptional value. You can buy a 20-year-old tawny Taylor's 20-year-old tawny is about £28. And that's 20 years of aging, possibly more, because it's an average. When you think that some of the storage companies in the UK will charge £9 a case a year just to look after it for you, to buy a wine that's already 20 years old and has been aged in situ all that time, for not much more than £1 a year, is a veritable bargain. And there's no other wine I can think of where you could get something still drinkable at that age for that little money.
No, you can get some wines. Some old Grand Reserve Riocas, etc., but not necessarily 20 years old. So Christmas time, must be a big time of year for you guys.
Absolutely. We certainly sell an awful lot of port in the run-up to Christmas, as indeed wine in general does in this country. Wine must be one of the few businesses that discounts its wares at the time of year when people most want to buy them, and yet that seems to be what happens, and all the more so with port, which is often available on some crazy deals this time of year because that's when it's most often drunk. But in practice, there are lots of port styles that are good for drinking all year round. A chilled tawny in the summer can do the same job as any chilled sweet
it's nice.
Wine. And also the ability of port to accompany food isn't narrowed to just Christmas, albeit some of the things are quite festive and not necessarily good for you, but delicious all the same, things like chocolate and cheese and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure. So what sort of port would go with chocolate then?
Well, chocolate's an interesting thing in that it's one of the hardest substances to put with wine because it's sweet, obviously, and creamy and mouth-coating. We tend to talk about the finish on a wine. We rarely talk about the finish on food, but actually, if we did, chocolate would have one of the longest ones.
Yeah.
So you need a wine with a lot of flavour to cut through that. But you also need a wine that's got tannin because chocolate, cocoa, has bitterness in it. In fact, it has tannin in it. So you need a wine that's got tannin, but is also sweet and is powerful, and that's a sweet red wine. And there are some others from Italy and from the south of France, but really port has to be the king of sweet red wine, and it's the premium wine, if not the only wine, for going with chocolate.
Would that be like a tawny or an aged port? What would you?
I think that would be a ruby port, so a red port, but preferably one that's had some age, like a single quinta or a vintage for quality. But definitely a red port, which has got tannin in. Tawny ports, because they age in a barrel for such a long time, the tannins all dropped out along with the colour, which is why they're tawny, and that then makes them chillable, so you can serve them from the fridge and perfect with nuts and with the nuttier, harder cheeses. Cheeses with a bit less acidity.
But I always think of port and Stilton or port and Roquefort. What
Ah, well, we have a two different things going on there, really. Stilton, by virtue of the blueness in it, functions a little bit like chocolate in a way, because it's got bitterness from the blue in the cheese and also sweetness from the creaminess of it. So that's where you want a red port. The classic combination of vintage port and Stilton is a cliche, but cliches are based in truth. Mm-hmm. Whereas Roquefort is a sheep's milk cheese, so it's very salty and very high in acid. So actually, although there's blueness there, it tends to go better with tawny port. But it's certainly so flavoursome that it's quite hard to put with any other kind of wine.
Sure.
So tawny port and Roquefort is a very classic.
I always think of the acidity in the cheese helping to cut through some of the sweetness in the port.
Exactly, and that's exactly what acidity does. Acidity and sweetness can sort of compensate for one another and cancel each other out.
Ah, brilliant.
Getting that balance right is the real secret to food and wine matching.
You mentioned about dropping the temperature of a tawny port. Could you do that to, say, a vintage port, for example?
Well, I don't think I drop it too much, but it's worth bearing in mind. I think these days we do tend to drink wines a little bit too warm on occasion. It's worth remembering that the phrase room temperature predates central heating by some considerable margin. So generally, the difference in room temperature and cellar temperature when the expression was first coined would have been the difference between 16 or 17 degrees, which is probably the ideal temperature for serving red wines at generally. You can always warm them up in the glass, but you can't cool them down. So I'd be inclined to serve things a little bit cooler than the ambient temperature if the ambient temperature is warm in the winter. Yeah. But tawny port, certainly, because there's no tannin, it can be chilled right down. It's bitterness that you need to avoid chilling.
Okay, so the cooler it is, the more the bitterness comes through, so the tannins.
Exactly. Coolness tends to exacerbate bitterness. That's, I think, you drink lager cold, but ale not cold.
Because ale
has more bitterness in it.
I was that was just because English was strange.
Well, strange, obviously. But
yeah. Okay, being a Kiwi, we drink everything chilled down. What about like vintage ports? And you wouldn't chill a vintage port down because it's full
of tannins. I wouldn't chill a vintage port down, but I wouldn't warm it up either. You sometimes see people, you know, trying desperately to get wine to what they think is the right temperature for drinking it by putting it on radiators and stuff, and that's an anathema. If the ports come straight from the cellar, just leave it standing up in the room for a little while. You can always warm it up in the glass. But there are no rights and wrongs here. You can like whatever you like. No one can tell you that it's wrong or not. But it's a good maxim not to serve things too warm, because they tend to make things taste more alcoholic.
Yeah, and especially something like port, which has got 20% alcohol in it.
Exactly. Yeah. Although it's interesting, a lot of people are put off port by a couple of factors. They think it's really alcoholic. Well, it is alcoholic, but it's no more alcoholic really these days than quite a lot of table wine. Port is 20%, but a lot of people are now accustomed to drinking New World red wines at 15.5%, and maybe even more. Whereas the difference between port and wine was drawn hundreds of years ago, when table wine was perhaps 10 or 11%. So it's less difference than it used to be. And another thing worth remembering is a lot of people will blame port for a hangover. And actually, that's just because the port's the last thing you can remember. It's the cumulative effect that's caused the hangover, not the
port. Sure. Yeah. People always tell me about hangovers, and it's like, I reckon it's how much you've drunk rather than what you're drinking more than
exactly right, yeah. And it doesn't give you gout either.
Oh, doesn't it?
No, gout's a hereditary disease. Good, fine living can exacerbate gout, and I guess port can be part of that, but there's no correlation between port and gout.
Because you hear a lot of people talking about port and gout.
It's not true. It's one of those stories.
We cracked open a bottle of 1985 vintage port earlier and had a wee sip of that. Yeah. One of the things I noticed when I pulled the cork out was the port had sort of soaked through about halfway through the cork. Because they age for so long, how long can you leave a cork in a bottle of port?
Well, that wine, that delicious wine, was 21 years old, which is just coming round. Vintage port traditionally wants 15 to 50 years ageing in bottle, so that's just about opening out now. And you're right, the cork was saturated about halfway down. Once that saturation gets to the end of the cork, the other end, then the cork starts to lose its elasticity and its protective properties. So depend on your storage, really. If you've got wine that's more than about 40 years old, it may be time to start thinking about either drinking it or having it recorked.
Can anybody do that, or do they have to send the bottles back to Taylor's?
There are places that where you can get it done. A decent wine merchant should be able to advise on recorking clinics that sometimes pass around every so often, or there are places in London certainly that will do it for you.
Okay, excellent.
About 30 years is probably the lifespan of the average cork, so beyond that you're risking it slightly.
Ever thought of using a screw cap for a port bottle?
I certainly think screw caps on vintage port are going to be a very, very long way coming, because not least because Portugal is, as you probably know, the place where all the cork in the world comes from. So it wouldn't be very patriotic apart from anything else. and it probably wouldn't be the best interest of the wine either.
What about once a port is opened? You know, we've just opened this lovely bottle. We're actually going to take it up to some friends to quaff on the weekend. How long does port last? Is it really stable? And what's the best way of storing port?
Right. Well, obviously, before it's opened, the best way to store it is like any red wine on its side. Vintage ports will often have a white paint mark, which is the side that's been uppermost when it's been aged in the cellars in Portugal, and it's best to keep it that way. Once you've opened it, it will last a little bit longer than a standard red table wine, and that's because the alcohol and the sugar are both preservatives, natural defense mechanisms, but it will still start to oxidize. So you haven't got as long as people might think. You can't keep a decanter of port on the sideboard from 1 month to the next. That simply won't work. But a week should certainly be fine. If you know you're not going to drink it in the interim, it's probably better to put it in the fridge, because all chemical reactions happen slower,
yep,
at lower temperatures. But obviously you then have the disadvantage that you need substantial notice of when you want to drink it, because you've got to get it back up to temperature.
Sure. We put a vacuum van on the end. That'll suck out some of the oxygen.
Vacuum van will take out some of the oxygen and slow that process down yet further, which is great. With things like tawny ports, however, you've got a few months, because they're already oxidized, and that's the big enemy. The two things go wrong to an open wine. It starts its process of becoming vinegar, which is a bacterial thing, and that doesn't happen so much or so quickly with ports because of the alcohol. And it starts to oxidize. With tawny ports, they're already oxidized, so that's not an issue. So you can keep those open for 4 to 6 weeks, perhaps. But they still taste better the fresher they are.
Yeah, we do a lot of 10-year-old tawny, and sometimes if we've opened it one day, the next day we'll still use it in a tasting. But I think it tastes better after you open it.
Absolutely.
And not even give it that much breathing either.
No, you don't need to give it breathing because it's already had that. But certainly just the household things of dust and stuff like that. Other smells, wine can take on smells, and that can contaminate it. So the fresher the better, as with all wines. But at least port has the structure and the alcohol to keep a little bit longer than some.
Sure. What about decanting ports? You know, you see people decanting. Well, you don't need to decant a tawny because it has no sediment.
No.
Is it just the sediment you're trying to deal with, or what are you trying to...
There's two reasons for decanting, and it's like any wine as well. The first reason is to give it oxygen, so you're artificially allowing it to oxidize ever so slightly, which is part of the process of aging, which happens very slowly with a tiny amount of air that's in the headspace of a bottle of wine as you age it in a rack or in the cellar. So that vintage port we tasted had 21 years of that. As soon as you open it, you start that oxidation process en masse. But that can sometimes mean that with a big red wine, like a vintage port or any other big red wine, a little bit of oxidation can really help, and that's the origin of swirling it round in the glass. Well, of course, pouring it from the bottle into a decanter and possibly even back again occasionally can really give an oxidation, let the oxygen in and let the wine's flavours start to develop. So that's one motive for doing it, and it can advantage all big red wines. The second is because vintage port will throw a sediment. Not all ports do. If they've been filtered before they're bottled, they won't.
What is in that sediment? Is it tannins and other floaty bits?
Yeah, it's other floaty bits. Exactly right. It's precipitated out tannins and colour, the longest molecules in the liquid in the first place, which is why as wine ages, it goes browner and paler. That's why tawny port started out exactly the same colour as the red port. So those bits have fallen to the bottom of the bottle. They're still a vital part of the flavouring components of the wine, so you don't necessarily want to take them away before you bottle it, because they're part of the process of ageing. And indeed, they're not bad, they're not nasty, they can get stuck between your teeth, but what you should do is cook with them. The sediment in the bottom of a bottle of port or red wine is a fantastic thing to add to a stew or a soup.
Really, because I've tasted it and it tastes horrible.
It tastes horrible, but the bitterness breaks down and becomes part of the really useful part of a flavouring, a big thick stew or even a pasta sauce, something like that. But you don't want to drink it because it's quite bitty. So that's the reason for decanting, for the second reason, partly oxidation, partly to take it off the sediment. And although you can do it by holding the neck of the bottle against candlelight and keep the romance with a coffee filter paper or a piece of muslin or a funnel with a strainer in it, it's actually really not a difficult thing to do. And you don't need a decanter either. You just need a clean vessel, a jug or something, or another wine bottle that's been sterilised.
Yep.
Pour it out of one, through a funnel into the other, and then back again, having swirled out the original bottle.
We've got aerators, which have got a fine gauze filter, which catches the sediment, and then it aerates the wine as it goes into the decanter.
Yeah, that's a perfect thing to have. And very useful for vintage port, for sure.
We've got glass of the 1985 Taylor's Vintage Port.
Absolutely, yeah. What a lovely thing to have, especially this close to Christmas.
Just getting a bit of brownness on the rim, but it's actually, for a 21-year-old wine, it's not looking that old, is it?
No, that's exactly the point of aging vintage port in bottle. It only spends a couple of years in cask before they bottle it, and then it's bottled in thick, dark glass so that light can't contaminate it, and it's designed for aging from 15 to 50 years. And this one is still very red. If you just looked at this in isolation without knowing it was port, you probably wouldn't think it was any older than about 5. But there is a little bit of browning at the rim. The Taylor's style, Taylor's, I guess, is regarded as one of, if not the best producers of vintage port in each declared year. But the Taylor's style tends to be quite full-flavoured, quite rich in tannins, quite a big structure. Sometimes people describe it as quite meaty when it's young. So it needs a long time to come round. And 21 years, this is just opening, whereas a lot of houses, 85s, have been open for a while. And the flavours and aromas are still quite youthful for a vintage port. Mm.
It's actually, we opened it and tried it earlier, and I didn't enjoy it as much as it smells now. It's had a chance to open up.
Yeah, that's the oxidation that's been allowed to happen in that intervening time. All the flavours are coming together now, and it's smelling and tasting less spirity than a young wine would. Yeah. Obviously, you know, if you think about it, a fifth of this is brandy, a grape spirit, but actually it's all married together and mellowed, and that's what you really want from a top vintage port like Taylor's. Are you enjoying that?
I am now. I didn't enjoy it when we first opened the bottle and tried it. I thought, nah, I didn't like it at all. But now it's a lot softer.
Absolutely.
I think with a wee bit of oxygen, there's more aroma in the nose now. It's had a chance to breathe. And the mouth feels a lot, almost creaminess, not in the mouth.
Yeah, it has that wonderful richness on the palate, and there's red fruit with that slightly herby character you get from the Douro, along with a bit of hint of violets.
It hasn't dried out, like some ports, they taste quite dried out, you know, like dried figs or dried raisins. It hasn't really had that dry, you know, it still feels quite rich.
Yes, I think that's quality speaking out. I mean, it will, as it ages further, there will be some more dried flavours coming in when this, in another decade's time, it might be a little bit more like that. But that over-raisiny, figgy quality is generally a symptomatic of something that's been slightly less well done than this. Taylor's is still trodden entirely by foot, which is one of the gentlest ways of taking the flavour from the skins. And that helps make sure that it's more fruity than dried fruity.
Why do they do that? Because normally in a red wine, when you're making a red wine, you just leave the skins in with the juice, and then as it ferments, it's sort of the alcohol sucks the
well, that's exactly
out.
Right. What you've got to do with port, however, is get all the goodness, all the colour and the flavour from the skins very rapidly, because you can't do that after the fortification. There's no sort of post fortification maceration. So the maceration,
you get the alcohol
because the very high spirit content will tend to start taking phenolic compounds on the skins that you don't actually want.
A real bitterness.
So you want to avoid that. And the gentlest pressing implement so far that can be used extensively is the human foot. So a lot of companies are trying to replicate that with devices like paddles and so on. But taking elements from the skin in a hurry can be accomplished by the human foot, or by doing it in a hot environment, but that tends to make soupy, raisiny wines. So doing it properly is it's neither cheap nor easy, but doing it properly is worth it when you taste wines like this, I think.
I think we'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much, Rod.
My pleasure.
Cheers.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Roderick. You should have got quite a few good tips and tricks about how to get the most out of your port, and I hope you enjoy some nice port over Christmas. Next week, we're going to be talking to Mount Pleasant. They're actually owned by McWilliams Wines, which is one of the big wineries up in the Hunter Valley in Australia. And we're going to be tasting a vertical of their Semillon. Hunter Valley is known for its aged Semillon, but one of the interesting things that's been developing out there is release of younger Semillons. And we're going to go through and talk a wee bit about the region and also see how the wines change as they age. Fairly unusual to get white wines aging, but these Semillons from the Hunter Valley do a really good job. So until then, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show was brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show was produced by Jane Scott and recorded and edited by Chris Scott. The news was read by Jane Scott and researched by Sandra Clement. The music for the UK Wine Show is Griff de Jingle 1 by Marcel de la Jatelle and Silence by Etoile Noire.